Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is that time of the week where we get to chat once again to Professor Bill Kolbrenner. He's a professor of English at Bar-Ilan University. Ronita Tan, PhD candidate at the English department at Bar-Ilan and creative director of Writing on the Wall. Very good morning to you both. How are you?
Good morning.
Great. Good morning.
Okay, no, you're not sounding great. You're not. I mean, you can say the words, but I'm not hearing it.
Yeah, how about Baruch Hashem? We're processing, Howard. We're just processing. You know, and I see in South Africa, you are being associated. You were one of the evil Jews associated with apartheid, and that's an interesting way of kind of using language, right?
Right.
And of course, we've seen now on the BBC that jihad against Jews has been translated to resistance against the Israel Defense Forces. And I think also, I mean, this is always on my mind because, as you know, I went to Columbia. My wife went to Barnard. My niece just graduated from Barnard.
Right.
And you see that they injured an employee.
Mm.
And they're, of course, demonstrating now because two of the members of this BDS movement came into a class on modern Israel and disrupted it. They stopped the learning. It's interesting that everybody on the left talks about the scholasticide in Gaza. And this is meaning whatever universities, if there were ever any there. But what we're really seeing is on a university campus, that these kids feel empowered to injure an employee and disrupt classes. And this is what's really frightening, Howard. It's being called a sit-in and not a riot. Hmm. And there is no disciplinary action of Columbia or Barnard against these students. So again, yeah. I keep on mentioning, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, because there's this temptation on the left to see everything through Woodstock. This isn't Woodstock.
No, quite the contrary. In fact, I was talking to listeners about it earlier, and I was saying that the strategy has been a very, very successful one from the anti-Israel, the Israel hater side, is just to shout down any discussion. You've just got to be louder. You've got to be more aggressive. You've got to physically intimidate as well as just make sure that no other voices are heard. So this is the very, very furthest thing from anything scholarly or scholastic.
Yeah. You know, and there's no mask ban in New York State, and Columbia is not enforcing their own mask ban. Can you imagine, Rene, can you imagine people coming into our Israeli classrooms with masks on? I mean, it's just such a non-starter, or even in the public sphere. And you see these kids with masks, and it's so strange because they're the most entitled kids in the world. And they sing, "We have nothing to lose but our chains." You know, we have nothing to. And maybe that would be a segue into Ronit, because I know you've been thinking about the real chains that the hostages had to endure.
You know, I mean, this is going on over there, and I keep thinking about, because we live here. So, you know, there's some things that are more that occupy ourselves. You know, we do try to look to the outside, and we do see this, how we are being isolated and how language is used, you know, to isolate us, not just, you know, physical things, but language as well, which is very, and I just think about the past week and all the, you know, all the funerals that we saw and how what I felt was, and I know it's very hard to say it, but I did see the language of love being used at the eulogy.
Very much so.
And I think that was, in a way, when we're all trying in this like therapy session that we're having every week here, where we're all just trying to also kind of just to find those tiny bits of just hope. And for me, in the midst of all this sadness, just to hear those, you know, Yocheved Lifshitz, you know, when she talks about her husband of 67 years and she starts by saying, "My darling Oded." And that to me was just, okay, you know, it's sad, but there is this longing for something, and there was love, and there is love. When, you know, when I saw the use of music, when, you know, in the Bibas funeral, Yarden divided his eulogy through three songs, heavy metal songs that he liked, and each of them meant something to him. And it was, you know, we all kind of listened to them throughout this week and kind of understood what, you know, who he was, because they're not just a symbol now. That's also something that I feel, you know, just it kind of makes me angry also. These are not just symbols, these are people. And so I was, you know, and this morning I woke up and I had to watch the interview that everybody's talking about in Israel of Eli Sharabi, who came back looking like a Holocaust survivor, where, you know, in essence he was, and just talk about, you know, just being who he is and talk about everything. And I just,
share some of what he said with us, with our listeners.
Well, he was, you know, he came back. For anyone who doesn't know, Eli Sharabi was, he was kidnapped with his brother and his wife, his British wife, and, you know, his two teenage girls. They were, you know, they died on the 7th of October, and he didn't know. For 500 days, he held into a hope that they might be alive. And they told him when he came back after 480 days in captivity. And he wasn't aware that his brother also died. And it's just, you know, he sat in front of the camera and talked for an hour. And it was heartbreaking, but it was also necessary. I think we keep on looking on the outside and thinking, okay, people don't understand what's happening. And these things are very, very important just to, you know, for us to make sense in a way, just to break everything that people have been telling us. And I don't know, it was just heartbreaking for me to just watch that today. That's how I woke up today, watching this.
It's interesting. Does the psyche, the emotional state of people in Israel not connected, everyone's connected, not directly connected to the mourners and the hostage families. Does the emotional pulse of Israel beat according to how they are doing?
Yes. I would say yes. I think we're in such a roller coaster of emotions. You know, every day is different. Every day is being dictated by, and it's the power is not even with us, it's with Hamas, because they're dictating how we feel. And they are dictating, you know, our routine, because it's constantly being disrupted. It's, you know, and so for us, I think, yeah, we wake up and it's like you said, you remember when you said when you were in Israel and you felt something different in the air? And I think that's how we feel. Like every day is different. If we saw something that was horrifying the day before, then you walk around, everybody's more subdued. And if there was an elation, somebody came back and we were very happy, and that there's a lot, you know, we're just a bit happier, you know. So it is, in a way, very unifying. And then, you know, the threats from the outside get kind of pushed, you know, back. I mean, I listen to what you're saying and I feel really, you know, it's horrifying, but I'm more concentrated on what's happening here because that's what we have, right?
No, absolutely.
You know, also, one thing we haven't mentioned is the four bodies on Thursday night, and Ronit is talking about kind of the rhythm of horrors and interrupted every now and then by joy. And, you know, we don't even pause. And, you know, Ronit said, these are not symbols, they are people. These four people also have to be mourned. These four men and 86-year-old, they all have stories. I think that's what Ronit is saying. We hear their stories. And in a way, you know, the heavy metal songs and listening to the interview, it's like we're in a giant living room. And there is this sense of kind of shared processing, I think. And that is unifying.
Right.
But there's a trap to that also.
We're
not looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not really, you know, it's almost like there was no time for reflection. Now is the time for reflection because the ends are coming, you know, together. Okay. People are coming back, the hostages, but we're not looking for at the future. So what's next?
Well, that is the danger. You know, we have many discussions in planning shows, and we always look at if the funeral happened yesterday, do we talk about it today, the next day, where we take our listeners on a journey that was yesterday's journey and so painful, or do we need to, along with our listeners take the next steps and focus on the next things. That I almost see as a metaphor for how Israel and people within Israel are functioning.
It's almost like it's not in your control.
Yeah.
You wanna keep on going. You wanna have the rhythm of life, but Professor Coleminer said, it just keeps on interrupting. And what do you do? I mean, I'm asking you, Howard, what do we do? Do we stop and acknowledge? Do we try to reflect?
I keep, the one thing that concerns me greatly is that when we go through our own mourning process, we sit Shiva for 7 days. It's until the funeral, it's terrible. After the funeral, there's a sense of calm, and then real sadness for 7 days, and then we are forced to get up and walk out of our door. And I'm worried that because we aren't the mourners, but we are experiencing their pain, that we only have that part of it. And the walking out of the door is not the part that we are focused on. And what I'm concerned about is to live in a state of perpetual victimhood. And I'm not denying, obviously, because that's what any good psychologist would say, I'm not denying anything. I live in this and I feel it and I'm burdened by it. But how do we get up after Shiva? It's really worrying me because I'm not seeing it yet and I'm not feeling it yet either.
You know, Howard, it's an amazing metaphor. It's an amazing metaphor. And Freudian mourning is what you're suggesting. It's the ability, you don't repress the past, you go back to it, but you also try to go forward. And this very, very sad and tragic fact is that we're very good at mourning, Howard. We did it after the temple was destroyed, we did it after the Holocaust, and we'll do it after this, because that's one, we know how to mourn. And we know how to mourn because we never forget the past, but we always remember the promise of the future. And that's what Ronit says when she sees the bright spots. Those bright spots are not only for the moment. They connect us to something that we can aspire to for the future.
That is where we leave it. A beautiful note to end it on. Professor Bill Coleminer, Ronit Eitan, thank you as always. I'd love your thoughts on this conversation. How do we get up figuratively after that Shiva? 061-895-1019. Good morning.